welcome to a very special episode of the Lifecast. This week, we're going to break away from our normal routine, and we are going to be having a tag team message from Jessica Broberg and Sue Williamson. Both are pastor's wives here at New Life Assembly of God. They are both speaking and sharing their message specifically for mothers this past Mother's Day. We hope that you'll enjoy the Lifecast.
This is something I found. It said the mommy test. This mom, she was out walking with her four-year-old daughter, and she picked the little girl picked something up off the ground and started to put it in her mouth. I took the item away from her, and I asked her not to do that. Why, my daughter asked. Because it's been laying outside. You don't know where it's been. It's dirty, and it probably has germs, I replied. At this point, my daughter looked at me with total admiration and asked, wow, how do you know all this stuff? I was thinking quickly, all moms know this stuff. It's on the mommy test. You have to know it or they don't let you be a mommy. So we walked along in silence for 2 or 3 minutes, but she was evidently pondering this new information. Oh, I get it, she beamed. So if you don't pass the test, you have to be the daddy. Exactly, she said. Yes, we love our children. I want to talk to you guys a little bit this morning about something that I think we all deal with on some level or another, which is fear. And it affects us all, but I kind of want to talk specifically to mothers this morning, since today is a day that we take to honor them. And I think for mothers, well, it was funny, I wrote down just a few fears, and I jotted down fear of heights, fear of snakes and spiders, and fear of public speaking, because I think those are three things that a lot of people have. And then I had to laugh to myself because I was like, check, 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 that's me. I'm scared of all those things. Public speaking is not my favorite thing in the world by any means, but I do consider it an honor to be able to get up here and speak. So, and I feel like God placed something in my heart, so I'm going to share that. Maybe I can stop crying and share that. But I think as mothers, we deal with fear kind of, maybe not more, but sometimes I think in different areas in regards to just parenting and raising our children, because there comes with it such a importance, and we know that it's important to raise our children, but there's so many things out there for us to worry about raising them. It starts out really young from just worrying about what they're going to get into, if we read them enough books, if they should go to this school or that school. And as they get older, we worry about their future and different things. So in different stages, I think we have different fears. But I remember as a young mom of like infants, if any of you had a baby, you know what mom hasn't gone in the room in the middle of the night and kind of just tiptoed into the room and listened to hear if their kid was still, you know, breathing, because we have this fear, oh, you know, what if they stop breathing or something's going on? We just have this kind of fear in us. And then, so we have that stage, and then the toddler stage, which is the stage that I'm in right now. It has its own set of fears, because this involves more of, okay, I wonder what's going on. I wonder what mess they're getting into right now. I wonder if they're hurting themselves or what's going on right now. My son Levi is notorious for this. Anytime it's quiet in the house, I just think, oh no, where's Levi? Okay, we got to find Levi. What's going on? So earlier this week, it was funny because Aaron, I had told him I was going to share a couple pictures of some things that my kids have done in quiet, fearful moments of my life. And he came out holding Levi, and Levi had white all over his face. And I was just like, what is that? He's like, Desitin. He had it smeared. We should have taken a picture, but it was, we had to get it off quick because he was eating it. It was all over his face. And like 3 days before that, he got into, I got to put a lock on this door. He got in and found like this cradle cap, stuff that takes cradle cap off the head of babies. And he was underneath a blanket in his bedroom drinking it. And I was like, oh my, I mean, I had to call poison control and everything. So anyways, he makes me laugh. But so I have a couple of pictures if you want to put them up. This picture, this is actually at Steve and Rachel's house. Sorry, Safety Steve. I don't think he knows about this picture. But one time when we were at their house, I think Jacob did this, but he shoved, you know, a screwdriver right in the outlet. He was fine. But so that was a moment of fear. And I have a couple more pictures. Here's a picture of Levi and Jacob, but this is one of the many times Levi got into markers. And this kid, his immune system for a couple months was just made up of marker, whatever makes up marker tips, because he would get into markers and eat them and have them all over his face. I know, I don't know why I didn't get rid of them, but okay, next picture. This was a picture of Jacob when he was real little. I had this cute little plant in his room, and he got at it and destroyed it, and it was all over his crib, and so, and I think I have, is there one more? Oh, and the last picture is of Levi one night. This was a moment of fear for me because we had put the kids to bed. Aaron and I went downstairs, which is kind of where we hang out after the kids are in bed, and the boys were sleeping, or so we thought. And so we were downstairs for a couple hours, and we came up, and I went to bed, and for some reason I went into the room to kind of check on the boys and make sure everything was okay. And there was no Levi, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I know we put him to bed and shut the door. I know he's here. He's gone. I just screamed, Aaron, Levi. You know, we're running around trying to find him. We're searching the whole house. And finally, I walk out onto the patio in our back and open the door. And there he is, you know, you can see, out sleeping. But just so naughty, rotten, and so cute. So those are some of my panics. But every mom knows that. You have a moment where it just gets a little too quiet in the house, and you're thinking, oh, something's going on. I know something's wrong right now. So then eventually they become teenagers, and I don't know about this yet, but Sue does. And the fears that come along with having teenagers, and then they get to that point in their lives where they go out into their future, and the decisions that they make, and the people that they decide to spend their lives with, all those big things come along with it. So my point is, I think it's easy for us as mothers to have an element of fear, you know, in us, because especially with the world we live in today and some of the, I don't know, news headings that are out there. I was flipping through the channel the other day, and it said, 10-year-old boy brings gun to school, and I just thought, 10 years old, that's scary. It's kind of scary, the world that we live in nowadays, but the thing about fear is that it can become a faith blocker. And I think as moms, we all know that we want to be women of faith. We want to be moms of faith. But fear actually kind of blocks that faith from working in our lives. When fear is present in our lives, there's no room for faith to grow. The two of them can't coexist. One will always cancel the other out. So if you have either you have fear in you or you have faith. And we know that fear is not from God. In 2 Timothy 1:7, it says, "For God did not give us a spirit of fear, but a spirit of power, of love, and self-discipline." In Romans 8:15, it also says, "For you did not receive a spirit that makes you a slave again to fear, but you received the spirit of sonship, and by him we cry, Abba, Father." But fear is a tool that Satan uses to get our attention, I think, off of ourselves, off of God and onto ourselves and our circumstances or the things around us. If you have your Bibles, I'm going to turn to Matthew 14, 25 through 33. Matthew 14, I'm going to start at verse 25, and it says, "During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. 'It's a ghost,' they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, 'Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid.' 'Lord, if it's you,' Peter replied, 'tell me to come to you on the water.' 'Come,' he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, 'Lord, save me.' Immediately Jesus reached his hand and caught him. 'You of little faith,' he said, 'why did you doubt?'" I think this is a great example of our fear getting the better of us sometimes. Peter just says, "Okay, God, you know, call to me and I'm going to come out and walk on water with you." God says, "Okay, come on." So Peter steps out of the boat, and when his attention was on God, he was walking. He was fine. Peter walked on water for a little while. He was walking on water because he had the faith. But it says there, what verse is it right here? It says in verse 30, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out. So he took his focus off of God and looked at his circumstances, and I think that's where we get ourselves into trouble. We take our focus off of God and what he can do for us, and we begin to see things maybe in the natural, and we think, oh, this is hard, and we need to keep that focus on him, and he will give us that faith, and he will give us a peace that passes all understanding. 1 John 4:18 says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. And we know that in the Bible, when it talks about love, that we can, you know, kind of use God's name in there because God is love. So basically that verse is saying that God drives out fear. He can cast out our fear. And I think it takes actually an act of our will to stop us from letting that fear come in and settle in our heart, because we all deal with fear, and it's just going to be part of our lives. But I think it's what we do with it. When that fear starts rising up within us and we can feel it, we kind of have two choices. We can just decide to receive it into our heart and kind of let it settle there and get more anxious and nervous and fearful. Or we can take those feelings and say, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not going to let this, you know, settle. I'm not going to let this fear rise up within me. I'm going to say a scripture verse that I know that talks about fear. I'm going to pray. I'm going to just speak out words of faith. And I'm gonna just choose not to let that dwell in my heart. Many times we have a fear of what we don't see, but Hebrews 11, which is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, but it's the faith chapter, is titled "Faith in What We Don't See." So I think we just need to make that switch from fear to faith. Instead of being fearful of what we don't see, we need to have faith for what we don't see. And Hebrews 11:1 says, now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. I want to share a little bit just about a woman in the Bible who was a woman of faith, who was a mother of faith, and that is Hannah. And I know for those of you who know, we have a little girl named Hannah, and part of the reason we named her Hannah was because we loved the story in the Bible that went along with it. I remember Aaron loved the name Hannah, and I thought, it's an okay name, you know, I thought it was all right, but it wasn't my favorite. I had a couple different names picked out, like Isabella, which this morning he pokes me and says, oh, that's such a pretty name. And I said, I wanted to name our kid Isabella. Hello? Anyways, but what happened was, is he loved that name. He loved the story that went behind it. And I knew the story, but he just kind of kept saying, I love that name, Jess, I love that name. And so I went back and kind of reread the story, and it just kind of spoke to me again. I thought, wow, the story behind this is amazing, and this woman, Hannah, had so much faith, and this is a great name. Let's name her Hannah. So that's kind of how we got to that name. But so basically, Hannah was married to a man named Elkanah. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his name. But she was barren. She was incapable of producing offspring. I don't know what that is. Offspring. And she had prayed to the Lord for a son for a long time, and she had told the Lord that if he would be gracious enough to her to give her a son, that she would dedicate him back to the Lord. In 1 Samuel 1, verses 10 and 11, it says, in bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow, saying, O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. Hannah had faith. She was barren. There was no real reason for her to believe that she should have a child, but she had faith in God that he could give her a son, that he would do that. And so she trusted in him. And in verse 20, it says, before the year was out, Hannah had conceived and given birth to a son. She named him Samuel, explaining, I asked God for him. So I kind of like that verse. It says, before the year was out. I mean, before the year was out, Hannah had conceived and given birth to a son. That was kind of fast. God answered that prayer pretty fast. And so I just think she's a great example of just of a woman who, she had that faith. She was sure. She was sure of what she hoped for. She didn't know in the natural she was looking. She wasn't going to probably be able to get pregnant, but she was sure of it, and she had hope for what she did not see, which is the definition of faith. She didn't look around at her circumstances or what was going on. She just knew that God could do it, and she trusted him, and he did. He gave her a son. In verse 21, it goes on to say, when Elkanah took his family on their annual trip to Shiloh to worship God, offering his sacrifices and keeping his vow, Hannah didn't go. She told her husband, after the child is weaned, I'll bring him myself and present him before God, and that's where he'll stay for good. Elkanah said to his wife, do what you think is best. Stay home until you have weaned him. Yes, let God complete what he has begun. So she did. She stayed home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Then she took him up to Shiloh, bringing also the makings of a generous sacrificial meal, a prize bowl, flour, and wine. And then this next verse, this is the Message translation, but I thought it was so cool. It said, the child was so young to be sent off. I just kind of looked up and did a little bit of research to try and find out kind of how old a kid would be in those days when a child was done weaning him. And I think most of the scholars kind of agreed that it probably around the age of 3, some say between 2 and 5 or something like that, but most of them said it was kind of around the age of 3. So then I thought, a 3-year-old, you know, at the age of 3, she decided to send, she trusted God, and she sent her son, her 3-year-old kid, to go live in the temple and, you know, be taken care of by Eli, who was pretty old at the time. So she's sending this kid off to be taken care of by someone that she doesn't really know, but she had that much faith and that much trust in God that she was holding up her end of the deal. She said, you know, if you give me this son, I'm going to give him back to you, and he'll be yours for all his days. So when I think, just when I think about as a mom's heart, a 3-year-old, you know, I think it would be easy for her to be like, afterwards, be like, okay, God, you know I said I was going to give him back to you, but 3 years old is really too young. Maybe he just needs a little more time with me. There's some things, you know, that I'm his mother, I need to give him, to instill in him, to provide for him. But she didn't think that way, or if she did, she worked through those feelings, and she just realized that she had promised God that she would give him a son, and she just trusted him. She considered him faithful who had made the promise. Verse 27 says, this is Hannah speaking, I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. Hannah, she just trusted. She believed in God. She had faith. And there's lots of other women in the Bible that show us, you know, their faith too. But I just thought today, with it being Mother's Day, and just before she even had a child, before she even was a mother, she had faith in God. And she continued that walk of faith out as her child got older. And she just always knew that God was going to provide for her and trust in her. And so this morning, I just encourage you to, as moms and grandmas and moms-to-be, just to take a hold of that faith and not let fear overcome us, or not let fear maybe take us down a path that we go down because we're afraid of doing other things, but that we would just trust God, that we would trust his promises, trust his word, that he is faithful to us and that he will provide for us. He will protect our children. He will be with us every step of the way, and just he will be our guide. So I just encourage you to enjoy your day today with your kids and with your moms or family that you have around, and happy Mother's Day.
Thanks, Jessica. Thank you, son. Jess, thanks so much. And that is right from her heart. And you can see that she's a good mom, a good wife. And Jess, thanks for being a good example to all of us and for the words on faith. And just a little side note, that whole drinking that cradle cap stuff, that you know where Levi got that from. From Pastor Aaron. Do you ever notice his hair? It's just it's where he learned that. He was drinking that stuff. But why don't you welcome my wife this morning to the pulpit?
Thank you. Good job, Jess. I'm so proud of you. You didn't cry. I have Kleenex just in case. Well, it's an honor to talk to you this morning. This is fun. When I was little, all I ever wanted was to be a mom. So while other girls were planning careers, my heart was so just to be a mother. So I'm honored just that I'm here speaking to you today. I'm not a perfect mom, but it's something that I'm so passionate about. So, well, today I am a woman on the edge, and I won't get too close because I have my heels on. If I slipped, that'd be bad. But I am a woman on the edge. And so I'm going to tell you a little story about a woman in the Bible who was also a woman on the edge, very different edge. If you have your Bibles and you want to follow along, just a short scripture passage in Exodus 2. Now, this lady, not a lot of people know about her in our culture, but in the Jewish culture, she's very, she's held in high esteem. She's considered an honorable mother. And it was a few years ago that I first kind of studied her life when I was preparing a devotion for a baby shower. And I really felt to share this again today, just expand on it a little bit. So chapter 2 in Exodus. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, and she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. I want to just briefly give you a little bit of context of what was going on here. This was in the day when Pharaoh had sent out an edict that all male children should be killed. Exodus 1:22 is that reference. It says, and Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every boy that is born you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. I won't go too much into the history of that, but he was just messed up. So he wasn't threatened by girls, but he didn't want the men to be raised up to create an army against him. So his mother, her name is Jochebed, and stood on the edge of that river and had to put her infant child into the river. I can't imagine what that would be like, actually. I think that her heart was probably torn in two directions. One direction, wanting to hold that child close and believing that in her power that she could protect him. But I think after 3 months, you know, he probably got to the age where it was harder and harder to hide him and realized, in order to save his life, I need to let him go. And it's just a very emotional story for me, especially at this stage of my life. I think it's kind of neat. Jessica and I didn't talk about what we were going to speak on. I did call her and say, what are you speaking on? But we had already had our messages prepared by then. So, and they really line up nicely together. So God's so good in doing that. There on the edge of the Nile, I can just picture her just taking those reeds and weaving them together and creating a basket. And then she took tar and pitch and, you know, probably coated it on the outside, I'm assuming, just to make it stronger for laying a child in it and sending it down a river. I see a parallel to me today, and I just want to say that our children, they are gifts from God. They aren't ours. You know, they're not ours to keep. And a lot of times in life, ladies, moms, we have a choice, like Jochebed did, to hold our children close or to let them go. The great thing, though, as Christian moms, is that we don't just let them go. I look at it this way, the same way that Jochebed weaved those reeds together, my prayers are weaved together for my children and form a basket that then I can place my child into and send them out. I look at the Nile, the river representing the world, and send them out into the world. And it's not just, you know, the stage of life I'm at. I think that there are many times in our lives that we face choices where we can either hold things close or we can let them go. You know, I see the reeds as our prayers. But she added something else, and that was the tar and the pitch, and that was what held it together. And I consider that as our character as mothers and our example, because we can talk all we want, and prayer is powerful, and I'm not belittling it, but I know people that can pray, but if it doesn't line up with their actions, it doesn't carry the weight to the people that they're praying for. So that tar and pitch is our character. Example from life that I think of, I'm the mother of three daughters and one son. You know what? I can tell my girls, you're beautiful. You're amazing just the way God made you. You know, you are made in the image of Christ. You are his daughter. It doesn't matter what size you are. This, you know what? Only man looks on the outward, but God is looking at your heart. I can tell them that all I want, but if I'm constantly, does this make me look fat? Or constantly having to be a certain size? Or reading the side of, you know, food containers, checking the calories. They'll catch that. They do. They catch that. And it's, well, Mom, so if I'm created in the image, so aren't you too? And it's, you know, it's just an example of how our character, ladies, and our, the things that we put into our life affects our kids. You know, there's that saying that says, I see it when I go to some of those cute country stores in Toma. It's on plaques and stuff, and it says, home is where our story begins. And the things that go on in your home and the example that you set for your children, that is where their story begins. I remember once when my daughter turned 5 and we had a birthday party and I made tacos, I think. And there was a little girl, 5 years old at that party, and she was reading the side of the sour cream container. Oh, I can't eat this. It has too many fat. Or I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm sorry, we don't have low-fat sour cream in this house, right? Yeah. He claims it doesn't taste the same, so, and it's probably true. But I knew her mom. She was on staff with us, so I know where she was getting it from. A child doesn't pop out of the womb counting calories. Right? I mean, she was trained by 5 years old to know how to count the fat content in a container of sour cream and then tell the woman who prepared the tacos that I cannot eat your sour cream because it has too much fat in it. So don't think that they don't hear what you say. Don't think that they don't see what you do. You know, I remember the first time letting go of my child into the nursery. Our firstborn boy, I don't think I put her in the nursery for a good year, right? I was one of those mothers. I had a lot of fears, and I kept her close to me, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with not putting your child in the nursery. My point is that I remember having to let her go, and it was hard. She loved it. She was probably like, finally, Mom, you know? And the more I did it, the more I realized she's a better person for it. Every time I give her that little bit of, at that stage, the learning that she needed to socialize and all those things, she was better for it. She didn't need me there all the time. And then sending her off to kindergarten, I remember it. I see the picture of her with her little backpack, you know, or the first overnight trip, going to high school, first date, oh my gosh, or just, you know, sending them off to some social thing that is going on with high school friends that you don't know what's going to happen there, you really don't know, on my knees, praying, trusting that basket is going to protect them and hold them and keep them as we send them off. So for me, it's more relevant because we're literally sending our firstborn off soon. You can hold this over my head for a while, I know. The awesome thing is that I know that there are years of praying. There's years of weaving a basket, and then we'll just put her in it and send her off. And I don't know what's out there. She's going to Florida to school. I can't just pop in on her, thank God, she says. And that's a good thing because you know what? It's so unhealthy. As much as Jochebed wanted for her child to be safe and to grow to be the person that he was to be, I don't want to stifle that in my children either. And you know what? As women, our natural tendency is to want to control everything. We're controllers. We're planners. We see a single guy. We want to hook him up. You know, we're matchmaking. We want everything. Come on now. You know, no, I'm fine being single. No, no, you're not. I have a girl. Come here. You know, we do that as women. Or we see a white wall and it, like, in here. And paint, right? Could, you know, we want to paint things. We see an empty table. We want to put something on it with lace and something. It just needs something. That's us. We fix, we plan, we control. And especially when you have young kids, you're just naturally, I mean, they're dependent on you. You know, we're kind of, that's part of it. You need to kind of do that. But at the same time, there's a difference between that and holding them so tight that there's no room for them to develop and grow. Just even this morning, I was reminded the most powerful position we can take is on our knees. The most powerful. Because I was on my knees over there, and I knew my children were somewhere over here standing. And I thought that, I mean, I really believe God just showed me that is how it's supposed to be. I should be in the lower, humble position as a mother and allow my children to stand and take a powerful position because they are the next generation. They are the ones who are going to go into places that I've never been. I don't need to be the one towering over them and you do this and you go there and you wear that. And, you know, that's not, I think, I believe that's not the powerful position of a mother. It's on our knees. If we go back to the story of Jochebed, she had confidence in her God that he would protect her son. She had to release that full control of his life. I'm sure knowing that she was the one that put the baby in the basket, you know who her son was. He was Moses. Jochebed was Moses' birth mother. Think of what Moses did in his life. Think of the plans that God had for him. He led his people out of captivity. God had the plan, and it was in her releasing that allowed that plan to unfold in his life. I know that this is Mother's Day, and sometimes, you know, you might sit and think, okay, great for the moms. How does this apply to me? I'm just telling you, a lot of you find yourself on the edge. Not just with children, maybe with relationships. Maybe you need to put a marriage inside a basket and let go of it and trust God to do the work he needs to do in it. Maybe you have a business. Maybe you have dreams. Maybe there's things that you're trying to control in your life that you are just having a hard time releasing to God. I just encourage you today that the position of power is not in the controlling of it. The position of power is on your knees and trusting it to God. I would like all women to stand in this room, not just mothers, all women. Even if you're young, even if, I mean, girl, female, gender. Some of you, we just went to a women's conference recently, and part of this is inspired by that. But some of you in this room are daughters, and some of you are mothers, and some of you are grandmothers, and all of you serve a purpose. This morning, I got a text from a gal that said, "Happy Mother's Day to my second mother. just because you don't have children in this room, or just because you're not of that age, or maybe your children are gone, God, just in being a woman, has placed a mantle on you to be a nurturer and a mother to the other people that you see in this room. Not just your own children. It's to take care of the people. It's to pray. There's some young people in this room that I love to work with every week, and I tell them, I mean, Zane, you call me Mama Williamson. It's not just about your kids. It's about just taking that position of mother, that overseer, that planner and carer, but that position of power on your knees. I'm going to just pray a blessing over all of you standing and just trust that God will inspire you to be women of character, inspire you to, if you find yourself on the edge, to trust that you can put things in a basket and send them out into the unknown and the dangers, and know that God is in control, whatever it is you face. Let's bow our heads. Heavenly Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for each woman, young woman, girl standing in this room. God, I pray that you would just bless them today. God, that for the young, for the daughters, that you would put in them a passion and a hunger to serve you, to walk in power, to walk in prayer, to walk in faith, to trust you, God, with their futures, to aspire to be godly women who are strong in character. And God, for the mothers in this room, or the women who are of mothering age, I pray that even if they don't have children, that they look around and they find people who need a mother's heart in their life. Even if we didn't have it, God, I pray that you put a desire within us to be that for other people. That's, I believe, in the family of God, that is how it's supposed to work. And God, I pray that you just, those who are moms, that you give them strength and courage and faith to let go, to take their hands off, God. When we step in, you step out. I pray that you just give us strength to stand back and trust you with the things that are so beyond our control. And for the grandmothers in this room, I thank you for the baskets that they have already prepared, for the years of prayer and being faithful to you, God, and paving the way and being an example. I pray, God, that you would just anoint them today, that you would empower them, that you would strengthen them in their physical bodies, that their job is not done, that there are those of us who are younger who need them. We need them to speak into our lives. We need them to encourage us. We need them to show us the way. So God, for every woman in this place today, I pray that you would just bless them, that you would encourage. God, knowing that you have the plan, if we would just let go. Thank you, Jesus.
Creation's revealing your majesty. From the colors of fall to the fragrance of spring.
Thank you for listening to The Lifecast. The Lifecast is a podcast of New Life Assembly of God located in Sparta, Wisconsin. You can log on to our website at www.spartanewlife.com. Thank you again for listening, and join us next time on The Lifecast.
All powerful, untamable, awestruck, we fall to our